Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now, your ideas don't have to wait. Now, they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to Now.
The 2024 presidential campaign features two candidates who are very well known to Americans. And yet, there's complexity at every turn. Criminal trials for one of those candidates. Young voters who are angry. The Campaign Moment podcast from The Washington Post gives you what matters. I'm Aaron Blake, and I'm covering my 10th election cycle. My colleagues and I have insights that you won't find anywhere else. So follow The Campaign Moment right now, wherever you're listening.
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey there, everyone, and welcome to Tech Stuff. My name is Jonathan Strickland, and sitting across from me is my brand new co-host. Introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Lauren Vogelbaum. I am the social media editor here at HowStuffWorks, and I'm also your new co-host.
That's awesome. Lauren's going to be giving us her perspective on technology, and we thought that for her first episode, we should really tackle something she's really interested in, but as it turns out, we already did an episode on Halo.
Yeah, fortunately, there is at least one other video game that I do play. I cannot admit to being a huge crazy gamer, but I do enjoy some things like, for example, Silent Hill.
Yes, now, Silent Hill, a famous example of a game that's in the survival horror genre. And I have to be perfectly honest here. I have only ever played one Silent Hill game, and I had to ask Lauren which one it was because I couldn't remember. And she immediately identified it as Silent Hill 2. And
which is a good one. It's one of the better ones.
Really. I hear the story is really good, but yeah. I never got into it far enough for the story to really unfold for me. Mm-hmm. Because at the time, the gameplay was so different from everything else I was used to that I got frustrated because my brain is primal and cannot grasp things like that. So
sure. It was still a little bit tank-like at the time.
Right. But first, I guess we need to talk about what survival horror is. Now, it's a term that really was introduced by Capcom when they released the first Resident Evil game back in 1996. But it's not the first horror-based game. There are plenty of examples of
Certainly.
Horror games. But it was the first. It was kind of like, you know, you're always going to have that first time someone uses a term.
Right.
And as far as I can tell, that was the first time people had actually used that to define a genre of games. And really, it's kind of a subgenre. It tends to fit underneath the action-adventure genres.
Right.
And I always think of adventure games like things like Monkey Island or even older games like King's Quest or Space Quest, where it's more about solving puzzles and working your way through a story than it is about something like killing all the things.
Right.
So
it's not a shooter. It's
right.
not But it's also not purely a puzzle game.
Yeah. And there's certain things that tend to be in a survival horror game. For example, I mean, first of all, horror.
Horror.
Yeah. So there's usually some sort of supernatural, nasty, icky thing that's
trying to eat your kneecaps.
Yeah. Or multiple nasty, icky things trying to eat your kneecaps. Usually there's a sense of isolation.
Mm-hmm.
So you're playing a character that doesn't have a lot of contact with other people who can help him or her.
Mm-hmm. You're dealing with a limited inventory.
Oh, yes. That's a big deal, right? Mm-hmm. The whole idea of you have to conserve that ammunition or you have to conserve whatever items you have because there's a limited number. So once you use it, it's gone and
right.
you are really
screwed.
Yeah. That's it. The game should essentially be over because it's so hard to get through it without the resources. So you can't just, you know, go in blasting.
It's not a run and gun.
No.
It's not, you know.
It's not like Borderlands 2, where where ammo literally falls out of the sky at times. No slight against Borderlands 2. Love that game, but it's a totally different style of game. And, the whole idea is to create this sense of horror. So Lauren, why don't you tell me a little bit about, how you got into this game?
All right. Well, I was in college at the time, and cue aneurysm from Jonathan. Usually whenever I start talking about how old I am,
yeah,
there's
like,
this
like
vein.
What, like 2 years ago?
In his, oh. It was about when Silent Hill 2 came out that I actually started playing Silent Hill 1. Silent Hill 1 came out in 1999.
Yes.
And so I was a few years behind the curve, but I had a couple of friends who would invite me over to their house and we would have these all-night marathons of playing Silent Hill and scaring ourselves absolutely silly.
Mm-hmm.
We would turn all the lights out and just go.
Yeah.
Until all of us were too nerve-wracked to pick up the controller again.
Nice. Yeah, one of the things that struck me about the Silent Hill series is that they took a different take on survival horror than Resident Evil did.
Well, Resident Evil was still very, for not being a shooter, for not being a run and gun, there was a lot of running and a lot of gunning.
Yeah.
It was more action-based. The story was not extremely rich. I mean, you know, it was a story. But,
yeah, and it used a lot more jump scares, that
yes.
kind of scares, whereas Silent Hill was the sort of creeping psychological terror.
Very psychological, very Freudian, very odd. And a lot of the influences that the designers have talked about are people like Stephen King's The Mist, the terrific movie Jacob's Ladder, directed by Adrian Lynn.
Yeah, it's a documentary. As we say here on Tech Stuff.
Terrific documentary about Tim Robbins in the 1970s.
You already have me terrified.
David Lynch, stuff like that.
Yeah. So things that are truly unsettling.
Right.
That was the approach, was to make a game that puts you takes you out of your comfortable place. You know, it's not just that, oh, something jumped out at me. It's that something is wrong.
Something is seriously creepingly wrong.
And it's more akin to sort of Japanese horror in that way. This
exactly.
idea of creating an environment and a situation that increases the level of tension without necessarily relying on jump scares is one of the reasons why I really enjoyed when Japanese horror movies started to make their way into
right.
American culture.
With The Ring and
The Grudge.
Ju-on.
Yeah. Ju-on, Ringu. Yeah. Now, the problem with that, of course, was that it went a little bonkers because that's the way Hollywood is, right? They find something that people identify with and then they throw everything at it. And then then you're just flooded with it.
You get a little bit overexposed.
Yeah. And we can get into that a little bit later, too, because there are some criticisms about the survival horror genre that it can get a little formulaic, but that's a little early in our conversation.
Yeah. And we are talking, I mean, Silent Hill at this point has put out nine games. That is so many games.
That's a lot of games for any game series. Yeah.
For any series. What else? Like Final Fantasy has
okay,
that many
wait,
games?
Wait, wait. Street Fighter 3 alone has had like 73 games. Just Street Fighter 3. Right?
Okay, that is to be fair. But they don't have, I don't want to say that they don't have a plot line, because somebody would send me a very angry email.
The plot line is not what you play the game for in Street Fighter 3.
No. That is extraordinarily true.
So, yeah, there is definitely a plot. I mean, plot is everything. Story is everything in the Silent Hill games. I mean, really, in Silent Hill, it's all about a tale unfolding.
Right. And there are a couple jump scares here and there, and they are delightful because they're so few and far between.
Right.
So they do genuinely scare you. In Resident Evil, the 98th time that a zombie jumps out from around a corner, I'm like, meh.
Yeah, you've conditioned yourself to, okay, well, all right,
here's
happened.
A corner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, a door. Well, gosh, I wonder which version of the zombie is going to jump at me when I open up this door.
As opposed to sitting there with a bunch of your friends in a completely safe environment and looking at a digital door on a digital screen in Silent Hill and thinking, I don't want to open it. I need to open it to progress in this game, and I don't want to.
That's pretty phenomenal. And one other little bit of trivia I wanted to touch upon was something that you mentioned to me that I found interesting. So one of the reasons Silent Hill was so scary was that you couldn't see a lot. It was a real-time rendering engine that was a 3D engine.
And this was for the PlayStation.
Right, for the original PlayStation. And it was it could be very scary because even though you're having a real-time 3D engine, you couldn't see very far.
And that's because they put in a lot of fog and darkness into the game to make up for the fact that the engine was not very powerful.
Right. The hardware the game was running on could not render the graphics needed to have an extensive view.
Right.
So by the limitations of the technology, it actually became a scarier game because you couldn't see. I mean, leaving a lot up to your imagination. Now, I could think of one documentary that benefited from a similar failure of technology. We did a full episode about this on an old Tech Stuff episode. The technology was named Bruce, and the documentary was called Jaws. But again, it's one of those things where you take something that to most people, you would immediately say, well, that's a limitation. That's a drawback. And then you turn it into something that is a core element of the game, and it suddenly becomes an important part of how the game affects the player.
Yeah, by the time that they had better graphics engines with all of the rest of them, I mean, essentially starting with Silent Hill 2, which came out for the PS2, they had the capacity to render a whole bunch. I mean, you know, not out into infinity like they do today, but
sure.
But you know, it's you could they could have let you see more than 10 feet in front of your face, and they said, nah,
yeah,
that's okay.
And this is an element that we see added into games today that kind of sort of fit into the survival horror genre. Like, for example, I brought up the example of Left 4 Dead, which does not truly fit into survival horror. First of all, it's more of a first-person shooter than an action-adventure game.
Mm-hmm.
Second, it is a collaborative game. You can play with up to 3 other people, so mm-hmm. you're not as isolated
as
you
would
be.
You're not really alone.
Yeah. Now, as a small group, you're isolated because there are very few other people that you encounter in that game.
And it's still horrific.
Right. And there are levels, specifically in Left 4 Dead 2, there's a level where you are making your way through a sugarcane field or actually it might be a cornfield. I can't remember. But I do remember it's like tall stalks and there's a hurricane moving through.
Ew.
So your view is completely obscured by rain and vegetation. And you can't tell when something in front of you is a zombie or just another stalk of a vegetation.
Plant. Yeah.
And it's terrifying. It's also evil that they put in an achievement. I'm talking to you guys out there, you developers. Evil to put in an achievement where one of the achievements is to make it through that level without alerting a witch when you can't see the witch. You can't see them because everything's in your face. God, I'm never going to get that achievement.
Oh,
that was a tangent.
That was a tangent. I have no idea what we were talking about.
Oh, well, we were talking about Silent Hill.
We were.
This games.
I think I've heard of that one.
Running a business is no cakewalk. There is a ton to keep track of. Employees to keep happy, spending to control, travel to plan, and on top of it all, nobody knows exactly what the future holds. Your finance team always has to be ready to change. But with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. and you can finally say goodbye to the costly mistakes and risks that come from manual work and spreadsheets. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's CONCUR.com. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now, your ideas don't have to wait. Now, they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to Now.
The 2024 presidential campaign features two candidates who are very well known to Americans. And yet, there's complexity at every turn. Criminal trials for one of those candidates. Young voters who are angry. The Campaign Moment podcast from The Washington Post gives you what matters. I'm Aaron Blake, and I'm covering my 10th election cycle. My colleagues and I have insights that you won't find anywhere else. So follow The Campaign Moment right now, wherever you're listening.
Let's talk a little bit about the company that brought us Silent Hill, which is Konami.
Right.
And Konami, it started out way back in 1969, Japanese company. Originally, Konami was a company that specialized in jukebox rental and repair.
Huh. Really?
Yeah. So it was based in Osaka, and that was the main purpose of the business. But by 1973 or so, they started looking at the possibility of developing games. Mm-hmm. And by 1978, they started getting into the video game market for microcomputers.
Okay.
Now, sort of a predecessor to PCs.
Sure.
By 1979, they started to export games to the United States, and they started making arcade games as well. And then we're going to jump ahead. In 1990, they started developing games for a system, a computer system called Amiga. That's a shout out to Chris, you know, who loves his Amiga. 1992, they began making games for something called the Genesis. I don't know. 93, their headquarters moved to Tokyo. By 94, they start making video games for the PlayStation. 95, they started making games for a system that did not do so well, the 3DO. But they also made games for other systems and as well. I gave kind of like a compressed timeline and just a few general things just to give you an idea of what they were into. Their corporate structure is absolutely confusing. Because it's a big company with lots of divisions, some of which are their own company. So they've spun off operations into their own company. Almost all of them have Konami in the name.
Right.
So you've got Konami Industry Company Limited. You've got Konami of America Incorporated, which eventually became Konami Digital Entertainment Incorporated. You've got Konami Limited. Not Konami Industry Company Limited, but Konami Limited.
Completely separate,
obviously.
UK. Okay.
You got Konami GmbH. I'm sure there's a actual word for that. It's in German.
It's in German.
So, ich spreche nicht Deutsch. We've got, but now that's Konami Digital Entertainment GmbH. You've got Konami Kosan Company Limited, which is now Konami Real Estate Limited. So real estate. They've also got financing, Konami Technology Development Center.
So what you're saying is they're big.
They're big. They are not just a game company. They've got a lot of other things going on. So it's a huge, complicated company, and it's got a lot of different divisions, some of which have blossomed and then later folded over the years, because the video game industry in particular – has had some rough cycles, right?
Occasionally, here and there.
There have been some times where the arcade industry, for example, has really suffered. I mean, you know, it's just there's not a whole lot of money in developing arcade games anymore. Although Konami did create one of the most popular arcade games of all time. I am talking, of course, of Dance Dance Revolution.
Actually, that ties into one of my random notes about Silent Hill, because one of the best parts, I think, about Silent Hill, and this is going back to our conversation about the atmosphere of the games, is the music. The sound designer and composer for most of the series has been a gentleman named Akira Yamaoka. Mm-hmm. And he does just really gorgeous, melodic, creepy work for it. And one of those tracks was featured on a version of DDR.
Now, Lauren, one of the things I really wanted to talk to you about was kind of the emotional impact. And you were sort of alluding to that with the music and creating this creepy vibe and also the graphics creating the creepy vibe. But you said that there were some other things you wanted to chat about as far as the feel of the games. And it seemed to me like you had a lot to say about these games. And because, again, I've only played one and only just the beginning of it. I really don't have that experience, but I'm really curious to hear your input and why you picked this as the topic.
Yeah, okay. Well, so let me fill you in a little bit on what Silent Hill is about. For all of you who have never played any Silent Hill games, OMG spoiler alert. For those of you who have, you're going to be very bored for about 3 minutes.
So it's something for everyone is what you're saying.
Yes. we've got negative points for everybody here at Tech Stuff.
That's pretty much how we roll. Perfect. You're fitting in well so far.
But the Silent Hill series is set in a town called Silent Hill, and a small American town that looks strangely like a small Japanese town most of the time. And it's in the first game, your player character is a man named Harry Mason, who is searching for his daughter, who he has lost.
Adopted daughter.
His adopted daughter, yes. This comes in. This is extremely important later on.
Spoiler alert. I think her name is, like, Cheryl or something like that?
Her name is Cheryl.
Okay, good.
Yes.
That, by the way, literally the extent of my knowledge of Silent Hill.
Excellent. It's all me from here on out. And,
Sorry, I'm literally leaning back from the microphone, which Lauren is laughing about because I never do
because
that.
Because he has literally never done that, I think, in the entire history of podcasting.
That's pretty much true.
I'm like, usually I have to fight to get a word in edgewise.
That's okay. I'll still make jokes.
No, so you're playing this father named Harry Mason who is desperately searching for his daughter who is lost in this terrifying, creepy town that just seems wrong. It's filled with fog. It seems to be abandoned, other than one or two people, some skinless dogs and undead babies, you know, the usual. And he is perhaps understandably upset, but when I was first playing the games, I was first of all struck by the fact that it was a father looking for his daughter. Mm-hmm. I thought in comparison, especially to American storytelling, it was really kind of revolutionary to watch a father being upset about the loss of his child.
Right.
I thought that if it had been done in America, it probably would have been a mother instead. And in fact, when the Silent Hill movie came out they did change it to a mother. And not that women have no place in the media, certainly,
right.
But I just thought that it was a more interesting choice to have it be a father.
Right. And as I recall, you said you liked the first 35 minutes of that movie and then you didn't like it so much.
I get very angry at that movie, but that actually fits in more with some of the discussion later because, because I have to admit that I've only played the first 3.5 Silent Hill games. I've probably played about 4 total, but
right.
but the first 3 to completion.
Gotcha.
And then Silent Hill 4, The Room, and Silent Hill Homecoming are the only 2 titles that I've picked up, and I didn't enjoy those nearly as much. But we can get into all of that later. So
So
the story follows Harry Mason. It turns out, like you do, that his daughter Cheryl is the soul divided reincarnation of a little girl whose mother used her to raise a demon.
That, I almost follow that. No. Okay. All right. So she was the focal point for a truly evil summoning.
A truly
ritual.
Evil summoning. Well, to be fair, the purpose of the summoning was supposed to bring peace and goodwill.
Oh, okay. Right, because another thing we should point out is that Asian mythology and the idea of demons and ghosts can differ quite a bit from the Western versions of these things as well.
Absolutely. So, and actually, strangely, some of the mythology in these games seems to have been based on Jewish Kabbalah.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So, but with also those pop culture references to Stephen King and other stuff. I mean, and some of those references are very clear throughout the games. Streets are named after Richard Matheson and Richard Bachman, which is Stephen King's early pen name.
Yes, his alter ego, the one who wrote things like Thinner.
Yes. There's a reference to the Midwich Cuckoos, which of course became Village of the Damned in film, Ray Bradbury, stuff like that. So there's a lot of great history inserted into those games, and you know that's the nutshell of the first game. I don't want to get too detailed about it because then I'm just going to be explaining how he runs through various different creepy scenarios,
right,
and that they're creepy.
Well, to me, what's also interesting, like you were saying, it's a father searching for a daughter. And we've seen other games since then kind of tap into that same thing. I'm thinking of like the Dead Rising 2 game, mm-hmm. has a very similar, which again, not so much a survival horror. It is in the sense that some of the themes are very similar. But again, it's a father who's trying to protect his daughter by getting her medicine to keep her from transforming into a zombie.
Mm-hmm.
Spoiler alert if you've never played Dead Rising 2, but that game is old. So come on. But that happens at the very beginning of the game. It's not mm-hmm. It's not like a spoiler at the end or anything. That's at the very beginning. It's established that your purpose is to keep getting medicine until you guys get rescued. So that way it keeps your daughter alive. Also, the recent Walking Dead episodic games have a character who acts like a father figure,
right,
to a little girl. He's not the girl's father. He's actually escaped con is probably the wrong term. He was a man being escorted to prison when the zombies happened.
Uh-huh.
And then a car crash later, he's no longer in the cop car and he's trying to survive. So it's not like he's an escape con, but he ends up being the protector of this girl, and the storyline unfolds with him really taking on that role. So it's interesting to me because it seems to me like this first Silent Hill game kind of created that model, and other games have sort of followed, saying this is an interesting dynamic and it's one worth exploring and it's rich for its storytelling potential.
Sure. And also I think it's a little bit less insulting to have, if you're going to have to go rescue someone in a game, I think it's a little bit less insulting for it to be a child.
As opposed to a full-grown woman?
Yes.
Like
one.
In Resident Evil 4?
Yes.
Like one of the most useless characters to follow you around and... Oh.
You never have someone intelligent or useful following you around in video games.
That's usually
other than like the Arbiter, but that's a separate issue.
It's usually the fault of the AI.
Yes,
it's
exactly.
Not necessarily the fault of the character.
But
in Resident Evil 4, it's both. It turns out. Spoiler alert for that too. I once played. It was Resident Evil 5. I got to play on the side of the Hard Rock Casino in CES.
Ooh,
that's interesting to play survival horror when it's projected 77 stories high.
Huh.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how I feel about that.
It was awesome. It was a little chilly, but it was awesome. It was a Capcom thing at CES, and I had a great time, and I'm not going to brook any discussion on the matter.
Good for you.
But no, Silent Hill really started to set some interesting trends in that.
Running a business is no cakewalk. There is a ton to keep track of. Employees to keep happy, spending to control, travel to plan, and on top of it all, nobody knows exactly what the future holds. Your finance team always has to be ready to change. But with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is, experience. And you can finally say goodbye to the costly mistakes and risks that come from manual work and spreadsheets. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now, your ideas don't have to wait. Now, they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to Now.
The 2024 presidential campaign features two candidates who are very well known to Americans. And yet, there's complexity at every turn. Criminal trials for one of those candidates. Young voters who are angry. The Campaign Moment podcast from The Washington Post gives you what matters. I'm Aaron Blake, and I'm covering my 10th election cycle. My colleagues and I have insights that you won't find anywhere else. So follow The Campaign Moment right now, wherever you're listening.
The survival horror games that came before it were not as necessarily as deeply story-driven as Silent Hill was.
Mm-hmm. And or as atmospheric.
Right, or as atmospheric. That's another good point. And in fact, before we really get into the deep level of discussion, kind of where you're deconstructing things,
sure,
and getting angry, because I can't wait to see Lauren angry, because I'm usually the angry one on this show. And guess what, guys? I'm not always going to be the angry one now. Isn't it awesome? Someone else is going to be angry too.
Yay!
Sometimes I'm going to be the one hiding.
Super party angry dance time.
Here's some other games that came out in 1999, just to kind of give you a comparison with this sort of revolutionary story.
Uh-huh.
So in 99, that was also when we got things like Asheron's Call, which was an online role-playing game, one of the uh-huh. early ones. Baldur's Gate, Tales of the Sword Coast came out that year.
Okay.
Cabela's Big Game Hunter 3. Cricket. The Cabela's series has kind of an interesting reputation online if you're not familiar with it. Castlevania for Nintendo 64 came out that year. Crazy Taxi.
Hey.
I have that for my Dreamcast. I still have a Dreamcast. Dead or Alive 2. Classy game.
Oh, yeah.
Donkey Kong 64. Grand Theft Auto 2. That was back when it was a top-down game.
Right. Uh-huh.
It was not a first-person view.
Or third-person view.
I think of first person because it's when you're in the car. But yeah, third person, and you can also do third person in the car too, right?
Yeah.
Not everyone plays first person like I do.
Indiana
Jones and the Infernal Machine, which is a good example of an adventure game that does not have a horror theme, but it also has that sort of puzzle solving mechanic that is very important in survival horror. Planescape Torment, which was a D&D game that got a lot of fans. Quake 3 Arena, if you want that first-person shooter experience. Resident Evil 3 Nemesis came out that year.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
SimCity 3000 came out that year.
Mm-hmm.
Ultima 9 Ascension, the only Ultima game I have never played, came out that year. And the greatest video game to ever come out on the N64 came out that year, and it is not GoldenEye.
What is it, Jonathan?
WWF WrestleMania 2000, and I am not joking.
Jonathan, I'm sure that you guys know this, but Jonathan might be a little bit excited sometimes about wrestling.
WWF WrestleMania 2000 is one of my favorite video games of all time, bar none. I even think it's better than No Mercy, which came out the following year.
Strong words.
Strong words indeed.
I've never played any of those games.
I'll bring it in.
Excellent.
And you're going to create your own wrestler, and it's going to look like you, because I've already got one that looks like me.
I'm not sure if that's actually a true fact.
I'm in chaps and a mesh shirt in the game. But that's because it's based on a character I played on stage. It's not the way I normally dress. I mean, today's an exception. But... anyway, That's an example of the type of games that were coming out the same year that Silent Hill did. So Silent Hill really was
very different from
Very different. Mm-hmm. And that's the main reason why I kind of assembled that list. And that, of course, is just a tiny, tiny sample of all the hundreds of games that came out in 1999.
Sure. I mean, gaming industry was a thing by 1999.
Yeah, it turns out. You know, there were quite a few consoles on the market, and then more were coming out shortly thereafter.
Right.
Because this is the PlayStation 1 era. This is before Xbox.
Yeah, because it was only in 2001, September of 2001, that Silent Hill 2 came out for the PS2.
Yeah.
And that game built up off of the Silent Hill 1 story in a way that was not necessarily connected to the first story. None of the same characters showed up. Aside from some of the villain monsters. Mm-hmm. But what they did with the story is what I really find fascinating about the Silent Hill series, and I think why it has endured as much as it has, because what they did is they took this concept of this town that has been psychically messed around really hard.
Mm-hmm.
And they extended that so that Any other person who has had dealings with this town, the town feeds off of any psychic badness going on with them.
So damaged characters feed this thing.
Damaged characters feed this thing, and it draws them in, and by their presence they change the town, or they change their own perception of the reality in the town. It's a little bit shaky about how that works.
That's interesting.
It's fascinating because it means that anyone who has had any kind of contact with Silent Hill and then done something completely terrible, like people do, winds up being drawn back into this town and going through their own extremely personal version of hell.
Mm.
And that's awful. I don't want that to happen to me, but I sure do want to play a video game about that. That is emotionally fascinating.
Well, it's a definite interesting take on a story.
Right.
Now, there were things that made you angry.
There ended up being things that made me angry in this video game series. Eventually, a group of Konami employees called Team Silent worked on the first four games.
Right. This was an internal development team working directly underneath Konami. So Konami is developing and publishing a game that was completely made in-house.
Right. It was kind of a pet project, especially after the enormous success of the first game. They had an entire 50 people working on the second one. I think it dropped down to maybe 40 for the third and fourth ones. The third and fourth ones were actually developed nearly simultaneously within Konami. Silent Hill 3 was a direct sequel to Silent Hill. Actually, it picked up again with Harry Mason's character, or his daughter, actually, spoiler alert. But Silent Hill 4, The Room, was built to be more of a shooter, more of an action-oriented game with still some of the puzzle aspects and still set with the creepy atmosphere, but it was intended to be more action-packed. Mm. And for me, honestly, that's why it failed.
Interesting because the Resident Evil series took a very similar approach. Like, it changed to be a little bit, it got increasingly more action oriented, but I think it actually managed to find an audience, mm-hmm. like a larger audience that way. Like, people who had never thought of playing the other games because the play style didn't appeal to them. But I can see how the elements that truly defined the series early on by getting away from that could potentially lose fans.
Right. And it's not, I mean, I, you know, I'll admit I'm the kind of person who enjoys Myst, but I'm also the kind of person who enjoys Halo.
Yeah.
So it's not, you know, it's not that I was just looking for a puzzle experience and that I was upset that I had to shoot things.
So you people who have never played the game Myst, because there may be a few of you youngins out there.
Oh dear. I had never even thought of that.
Yeah.
I'm getting the aneurysm vein that Jonathan usually gets.
It hits me all the time. But no, Myst was a puzzle game, essentially, but it was done and there was an overarching story that the puzzles all fit into. You could argue whether or not the story made any sense or if the narrative was worth the effort of solving these puzzles, some of which seemed to have no sense of logic to them. It was just one of those things where click things until stuff happens. But, you know, there were logical underpinnings to most, if not all, the puzzles. Sometimes that was just hidden enough from the player to not be obvious.
Right.
But that was a you know, that was all you did in that game was solve puzzles.
Yeah.
So I was just saying that so that way you could, you know, our listeners who are unfamiliar with it, but probably know Halo, would be able
have some kind of frame of reference
there. Exactly.
Yes. Thank you, Jonathan.
No worries. that's the only reason I'm here.
After Silent Hill 4 came out, Konami started shipping the title out to various other studios.
Mm-hmm.
Climax Studios has worked on it. Other stuff. Double Helix, Vatra Games did the most recent one, I think. And,
So these
are all American, and I think Vatra's a Czech company, actually.
Okay, so you've got companies that are not, that are trying to preserve the feeling of Silent Hill, but are not necessarily as invested in it as the team that originally developed it.
It's hard when it's not your baby to take quite as good care of it, I think.
Yeah, it can be a challenge. I mean, I'm sure that 343 Studios has that same
sort of
burden of responsibility to be good stewards of the Halo franchise.
But it's still not yours, and you're going to want to do slightly different things with it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like Willy Wonka wanting to recruit Charlie and not a grown-up because he can mold Charlie to do his will.
Another excellent documentary.
Yes.
The first one, anyway. Starring Gene Wilder.
But these people have all loved the series of games. I've read a lot of interviews with all of the creators, and they are so passionate about it, and I love hearing that, except for the part where I feel like they took more after Silent Hill 4 The Room. Most of the sequels have been more action-y and less puzzly. I get a little bit frustrated when I just want to get to the next point in the story, and there are so many things to shoot, and I can't just run away from them.
Mm.
And also they increased the level of violence. Partially it was just a graphics rendering issue.
Sure.
I think because as graphics have improved, you can really see the knife strokes and
right. Wow, you can really see how the bone breaks.
No, but you can. And
yeah.
I'm not necessarily squeamish. Some of my favorite horror films are things like Hellraiser or Slither.
Not known for going easy on the gore.
I love a good schlock flick, but that's not necessarily what I'm looking for Silent Hill. And like many nerds, I do get a little bit protective about the media that I consume.
Yeah.
I'm
sorry.
Oh, no.
I was just going to say, it very much reminds me of how Boris Karloff used to criticize the horror movie industry because he said that the movies he made, he liked to think of them as terror pictures. Like the
right.
idea was that they inspire terror, the sense of unease and fear,
mm-hmm.
whereas horror movies were more about shocking you and grossing you out.
Yeah.
And it's two different things. It's the same reason why, again, I really like the Japanese horror because it was something that could increase that tension and terror. Same way that I like some 1970s and early 80s horror movies that because of a lack of budget, they had to use other tricks in order to really get you uneasy.
Right.
And to me, those are really effective. And if you have like a huge budget and it's all about people exploding into buckets of blood, then after a while you're like,
and how many buckets of blood you can fit in there.
After like the third or fourth time, you're like, okay.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I mean, I hate to bring up, I love Sam Raimi's work, don't get me wrong.
Oh, no.
But Evil Dead, I mean, Evil Dead, you eventually are like, all right, how many times am I going to see them have to try and chop up this
right.
possessed person?
Right.
You know.
Before it gets a little bit old.
Like, yeah.
Or just funny. It becomes not terrifying.
Right, which is why Evil Dead 2 and then Army of Darkness took a more comedic approach to the material because people were finding a movie that was not intended to be comedic
was
to be humorous.
In fact, extremely funny.
Yes. Sorry. Anyway.
Yeah.
So.
No.
So the style of the game changed.
Yeah, the style of the game changed, and there was the point at which I really stopped playing Silent Hill was at the end of Silent Hill Homecoming. Your final boss fight, again, spoilers everywhere, apologies, guys. Your final boss fight is against this Freudian monstrous representation of your pregnant mother as a spider, and you have to slash her pregnant belly, and she vomits on you. And that is the point at which I was like, I'm out. I'm basically done with this.
Yeah, that's
I'm not okay with this anymore.
That's a bit much.
And okay, yes, that is horrifying. That is completely horrifying, but it's so horrifying that I don't want to look at it anymore.
Yeah, it's not
fun.
It's no longer entertainment or fun.
Me.
It's just It's just wrong.
It's actually unsettling. It's not fun unsettling. And so that's the point at which I kind of gave up on the series.
So that's kind of my feeling about certain grindhouse horror movies, right? Where the grindhouse horror was all about the taking exploitation to the furthest limits, to the point where it's just truly uncomfortable to watch it.
And
if you are at all entertained, you then feel a sense of shame for feeling entertained by what's unfolding on the screen in front of you.
Like some of,
if you're
some
like
of,
me anyway.
Some of Takeshi Miike's films do the same thing for
me.
And or actually all of them.
That's Audition,
basically.
Right? Audition.
Yeah, Audition
is
him.
Yeah.
And technically the Silent Hill kids have called out the author of the original novel of Audition, Ryu Murakami, as one of their
influences.
But at the same time, I mean, you know, so that's all part of that. That's all in there. And I think that the Freudian, the psychological, and I do keep using the word Freudian, and that's only because that's all I can really call it. I mean, it's, you know, I hate to go too Victorian about things or too armchair psychology about things.
Sure.
But it is, I mean, the themes in this game are full of doppelgangers and full of, all of the representations of things that have come back to haunt you, literally coming back to haunt you, except with knives.
Right. And coming back to haunt you, except with knives. Reminds me of a girl I used to date.
That's a different show.
Yeah, it's not tech stuff. But Silent Hill definitely was a very influential game. I mean, we can see its influences in other games that came out. Things like even games that got super wacky, like Eternal Darkness.
Oh, yeah.
That was the N64 game.
That
was N64, right? Yeah, I think it was N64, where it was the game would
mess with you.
Would mess with you. Like
the
it would look like it suddenly turned itself off.
Right.
Or adjust the volume.
It would adjust the volume. It would, yeah.
Or you'd walk into a room and everything's upside down. Or you'd walk into a room and suddenly you are one of the monsters. You're not you anymore. And the whole idea was that it's messing with your sanity. And as your character's sanity decreases, it began to mess with you in a meta way.
Right.
So that you're like, why is my volume going all the way down? And then you turn the volume up.
You turn your volume up.
And then when the volume comes back to normal, it's like 10 times as loud because you've been turning the volume on your television up, and it's just been faking that the volume's been going down. But you could see elements of Silent Hill informing these later entries into the survival horror genre, including ones, you know, like I said, the definition of survival horror has changed over the years to the point now where it's kind of just a broad label that
sure.
we slap on anything that happens to fall within the horror genre.
Right. But that's not really what the genre is about. I'm going to go ahead and say that's not what my survival horror genre is about.
That's fine, Lauren. You just go ahead and define it and we're sticking with your definition. That's what we do here at Tech Stuff too. We make sweeping generalizations and then we stand by them.
But no, I mean, even things like BioShock, I think you can see the influence of something like Silent Hill. And,
sure.
Just because they're creepy, and
yep.
and that is their point.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that gives us a lot of insight into who you are. You like you like creepy things.
Mm-hmm.
You get irritated when they change.
Yes.
Yeah. No, I think that's it. I'm pretty sure that's all we needed to know.
Excellent.
But no, this, ladies and gentlemen, this. She is our new co-host. Lauren is going to be joining us on this journey that we call Tech Stuff, and I'm very much looking forward to it. She and I have had multiple extensive conversations in the office about just about everything, and it becomes pretty clear that her snarky sense of humor and my snarky sense of humor complement each other really well. So I'm really looking forward to this experience of recording podcasts with you. I can't wait to see what else we come up with. I've already got lists of stuff listeners are sending in for topics that we should tackle. And so I don't think we're going to be hurting for topics anytime soon.
Excellent.
And so guys, if you have any suggestions for future episodes of Tech Stuff, or you just want to say hi to Lauren and welcome her to the Tech Stuff family, I highly recommend you let us know. Send us an email. Our address is techstuff@discovery.com, or drop us a line on Facebook or Twitter. Our handle there is techstuffhsw, and Lauren and I will talk to you again really soon.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.